In this episode, I'm going to discuss common objections, rebuttals, pushback, initial comments whenever the infinite banking concept is discussed or brought up. So let's get started. You know, all these things out there, what would the Rockefellers do? What would the millionaires do? What would this do? What would that do? You know, like this is some big secret, you know. People used to accumulate capital. I say used to prior to, you know, really the 70s, going all the way back into the last two centuries, people have accumulated capital in life insurance policies. So the life insurance companies, you know, look, they said, hey, there's this cash value. Why they even created the idea of cash value so somebody wouldn't lapse a policy. Right. I mean, all right. Then they added the loan provision so somebody could borrow against the cash value to pay a premium. Right. Okay. The origins were today. All life insurance that has a cash value accumulating component has a guaranteed contractual right of the owner to collateralize the cash value. So whether or not you borrow against that, you go forward into the future. Let's say, and I know I'm throwing out arbitrary numbers because the numbers are going to be different from all of us, for all of us, right? So let's say I have $100,000 in cash value and a $300,000 death benefit and I die. Does a life insurance company keep that $100,000 cash value, $300,000 death benefit? I'll save that. Okay. That's what I'm going to go with. If I have $100,000 in cash value and a $300,000 death benefit and I die, does a life insurance company keep the cash value of $100,000? No, it immediately becomes part of the $300,000 in death benefit and it's paid out to my named beneficiaries outside of probate, income tax free. Didn't call an attorney. You know, I may have an attorney, may have a trust, may have all those things. I'm just saying if I don't, or I don't want that to be entangled, the death benefit entangled with all the legalities, it's going to pay directly to my lovely beneficiary, right? So did the company keep the $100,000? No, they paid it out. It was immediately part of the future death benefit. At my point in time, I'm saying it's $300,000. And that reminds me of, you know, I've said this many times, different ways. Let's say I have a $300,000 home, market value, right? Fair market value, not the appraised value, whatever, whatever. The fair market value, what a willing buyer will agree to with a willing seller without duress. I think that's the core definition of fair market value. If my home is worth $300,000 and I have $100,000 in equity, right? I've had the house $300,000. I've had the house for 20 years and I built up $100,000 in equity and I sell the property for $300,000. Who kept the $100,000 of my equity? Who got that? The mortgage company, the realtor, the seller's realtor, the buyer's realtor, the seller, me, the owner, the buyer. Did that? Who kept the $100,000 in equity? Nobody. It was immediately part of the $300,000 sales price. Now, we don't argue or have a problem with that across our financial society on a daily basis, if people even think through that. I don't know if they do or they don't. If they do, they don't have a problem with it. So is it that hard of a concept to consider the cash value of life insurance and the death benefit? $100,000 in cash value, I die, my beneficiary gets $300,000. In my example, did the life insurance company keep the $100,000? No. I mean, if you think through that and still want to stand on the point or the question of who kept the death benefit or who kept the cash value, you're not even being honest. That's not even honest. That's not even a legitimate, you know, intestinal fortitude. It's dishonest. If you think through it, in my opinion, okay? Then another very common, over and over, Dave Ramsey, Susie Orman, who's the other one? The other guy that I never had a chance to meet any of them, and I'm not going to, I get it. I didn't have a chance to meet this guy either before he graduated, Gary North. Let us pray. P-R-E-Y. So he was a Christian self. You know, I don't know if he was or not. Let God judge him. I don't know. He was a historian, became an economist to the churches. You know, I'm already, red flags are going up. Red flags are going up in my mind. You know, and he wrote an article, Let Us Pray, P-R-E-Y, P-R-E-Y. I talked to Nelson about that before he graduated. We've talked about that previously. I think Ryan Griggs done an article on it. You know, Nelson used to love this guy's work. He wrote a lot of books, right? And when I read that article, I'm like, Nelson, why in the world? How can you promote this guy's books? Have you read this article? He's like, well, James, he just doesn't understand. He just doesn't know what you know about life insurance. He doesn't understand. I'm like, okay. And that's, of course, just an example in my humble experience of Nelson giving grace, where my opinion, it wasn't due, but he did, and being more graceful than me. It's a lesson for me to be more graceful. I'm just saying, that's another guy who's got nothing but negative things to say about whole life insurance, right? And there he is operating outside of his lane. You're a historian, you're a degreed historian, you're an erudite historian, and you want to jump on economics within the church? Wonder why. Man, it must be profitable. Okay, I need to quit. I will. I'll stop going down that road. Okay, the life insurance company charges you interest to borrow your own money. I think I've already really addressed that, but I'll recap it again. When you pay a premium, the premium is the property of the life insurance company, and they have to take that capital, put it to work to meet a future obligation. So if you exercise your contractual right to borrow the life insurance company's money, collateralizing that loan with cash value, the company is going to charge you an interest. Here, if you're a mutual company policy owner, you're an owner of the company, they have to charge a rate of return on that loan. They have to take that money out of their investment portfolio and their capital surplus that was earning a rate of return, and they're going to get at least the same rate of return on a loan interest rate. It is so not complicated. But it's really not that big a deal either when you understand. Of course, if I have a company, and I do have several, maybe you have a lot of, you know, you're successful. And I hesitate here because you don't have to have a company, right? You don't have to be an entrepreneur. You don't have to be some great big, you know, business person to practice the infinite banking concept. Your business should operate, or your home should operate, like a business. You have income, you have expenses, you have goals, and you have things, you know, that you need. All right, and all of that is financed, so you should operate your family like a business to the point where you and your spouse can still have a loving relationship. I'm not trying to tell you to beat each other up over money at all. So I want to make the point that you do not have to be some business mogul to control the banking function in your life. It exists in your life, whether you're in business or not. But if you have a business, even if you have a home, right, you want it to be profitable and successful, right? And you want it to last, right? Of course. So the life insurance company that you're a part owner of is a mutual company, and you collateralize your cash value, you should be happy, in my opinion, to pay an interest, be charged an interest rate on the loan. James, how can you say that? You're just a lowly life insurance salesman. Yes, and I've been told I'm among the worst in the world when it comes to salespeople. Okay, well, I want the company to be profitable because I want them to be in existence when I graduate. And I want the tax-free death benefit paid to my beneficiaries or whomever I love and support. Okay? I want them to be profitable. There's no question. And when I pay the interest to the insurance company, I am directly paying them. I am not increasing the value, the cash values of my policy, the death benefit, or any value of the life insurance policy by paying the life insurance company interest. It's going to them. Their bottom line, they're being profitable. Oh, my goodness, here I'm a part owner of a company that's being profitable. Thank you. Don't play games, in my opinion, from the life insurance company. I don't want to support a dividend rate. I don't want a suppressed loan interest rate. I want them to be forthright, honest, with clarity on their financial dealings. Right? So I'm paying an interest rate. All I get control is the duration And the amount that I can collateralize, is based on the amount of and duration of premium that I'm paying, the amount of premium I'm paying, and for how long am I paying it. The duration, how much interest am I going to pay that life insurance company? The only other component that I can control is the duration in which I repay the loan. Right? They control the loan interest rate. But if I'm paying a loan interest rate, which I happily do, I can't wait to pay a premium, depending on the loan. You know, I'll either pay interest annually or along the way on payments. There's so many different ways to do that that this episode is not really addressing. That's a deeper work at client only access at Banking with Life. If you're our client, a work like that is either in there or will shortly be there. And I don't want to put carrots out there. Okay. I am directly supporting the profitability of a life insurance company by paying a loan interest rate. Therefore, I am indirectly, because I get to participate in the financial experience of the life insurance company if it's a mutual life insurance company and I'm a policyholder, right? I am indirectly supporting my dividend. Stop it, James. You're just a salesman trying to sell life insurance. No. If I'm directly supporting the profitability of a company that I own, a mutual company, because it's a mutual company, they pay a dividend. I participate in the financial experience of the life insurance company. And if they're profitable, then therefore I am, or am I not? Am I indirectly supporting the profitability of my policy and yours and yours and yours and everybody else that owns that particular company? And the short answer is yes. And I've also seen comments along the way from, you know, the uninitiated, right? That all of these things, that these objections to the infinite banking concept, the pushback, simple questions, what's the rate of return, is always answered with like hyperbole. You know, it's just esoteric answers. Give me a number, don't give me an answer. It's like, oh my gosh, don't help me, encourage me, or cause me to think through anything. Just give me the answer that I want that supports my preconceived idea. So, and we just don't play that game here, and not going to, though, although it's interesting and comical, the comments and all of that. Okay. Another comment that I see, experience, have heard, and will surely continue to hear, is it takes too long to build cash value. You know, my answer to that is compared to what? But then the common rebuttal from the life insurance industry, the people within the infinite banking footprint, they naturally, right or wrong, are inclined to manipulate a policy design to produce a higher cash value earlier, and I call them artificial because of the things that the manipulation causes in the future. So the agent, and if they have the ability, right, to build their own illustrations, and many of them do, these common names that you see, you know, that are going to show up here, that are going to show up when you type in bankingwithlife.com or James Nethery, all of those paid advertisements, these people know how to build an illustration. They know how to manipulate an illustration, right? They know how to manipulate an illustration to get excessively high early cash values, right? They may very well be within the company guidelines. Of course they are. The company's not going to let them build a policy, manipulate a policy illustration to outside of their comfort zone. You know, the life insurance company is going to limit that, how much cash value you can have in the early years, and all of the different ratios that they use to limit, you know, the construct of a life insurance illustration. My point here is that if I'm going to get, and I'm not saying that you shouldn't have high early cash value. I'm not saying that at all. But the manipulation that's required on the agent's part to get these artificially high, when you go into the 90-10, the 80-20, if you get this far in the episode, I appreciate you, Stan. When you hear 90-10, you know, everybody should have a 90-10 and that's the best. And there's all kinds of videos out there that are about that shallow. You know, you get to see a spreadsheet from the life insurance company, you know, or not even a spreadsheet. You'll get to see one or two pages of an illustration, or you'll get to see third party, you know, software, Excel spreadsheet or what have you, in these presentations, and they're going through the math and saying, oh, there's a higher rate of return, you know, if you build the policies this way. And they're not showing, they cannot show, they don't have the ability to show what is happening internally with that policy and what the likely outcome is going to be on those policies. That's the kind of manipulation that I'm talking about. That's why I use the terminology artificial early cash values. There's a price to pay for all of that, right? And who's going to pay that price? You, the owner, whomever chooses to do that. Good, bad, or indifferent, is it the end of the world? No, but I assure you it has its own problems in the future. Okay, the original, you know, comment that's very common is it takes too long to build cash value. So the natural inclination on the newly initiated agent or the agent is trying to get the sale or close the deal or whatever, they manipulate the illustration to appease the person who's saying that. Takes too long to build cash value. They're trying to shorten the duration, the time period in which total premium can equal total cash value. And it may look good and it may get the deal done. You know, if you have a deal that you want to do before you buy the life insurance, or you want to buy the life insurance policy before you get the deal done, that thinking, I've said it many times, is an extension of flawed thinking. Number one, I'm not thinking long term. R. Nelson Nash, think long range. I am afraid to capitalize, i.e. pay a premium. That's a continuation of that flawed thinking. All right. And I can demonstrate that, and I will at a future date, with policy design clients, you know, prospective clients, people that I've spoke with that didn't become clients, real live cases of why that's wrong. And then compare and contrast, right? It's like compared to what? Takes too long to build capital compared to what? Well, you can compare that kind of thinking and those types of policies that are manipulated in such a way that everybody's okay in the beginning. The agent gets paid, the life insurance company gets paid, the client gets to quote unquote start banking, and then things fall apart later, right? Compare that to properly structured. What does that mean? Properly structured to you, the individual, you and your family, your current circumstances, your current income, what you're doing, what you want to do in the future, real expectations over time. And my direct response to it takes too long to build cash value is compared to what? Okay. Maybe it takes me X number of years, 7, 8, 9, 10, 12 years before total premium equals total cash value. That is what it is. Now let's continue. We're talking about whole life insurance or permanent life insurance. We're talking about your life. You, me, you, and you, and you, and you. We all only have one exponential curve in our lifetime, only one. So how many times do you want to start and stop that? Because every time you stop accumulating, you've interrupted that exponential curve, and then therefore you have to start over. Right? So even though a manipulated policy may look really good in the first 7 years, 10 years, 12 years, that is going to be interrupted, that exponential curve, and then you have to start over. How many 10, 7, 8, 10-year time periods do you have in your life? How many times do you want to interrupt the compounding on your personal exponential curve? And whenever you see broadly beyond these specific points, internal rate of return, the cost of the whole life insurance, whatever, any particular point, if you live and die on a particular point, you're going to shortchange yourself, in my opinion. Okay. And then going back to some of these, another very regular comment is, why I should just pay cash. You know, I should just pay cash for everything. Let's think that through. You have to save up cash to be able to spend cash. And I know I've done a module on this. It's out there in the big wide world. So I have to save up cash to make a cash purchase. And as soon as I make a cash purchase, if I want to make another cash purchase sometime in the future, then I have to start saving again. So there's a cycle, and there's a lot of people that have done all kinds of videos on this over the last 10 years. You know, I mean, but it's not new, right? So build up cash, spend it. You get to enjoy whatever you purchase, an experience, an item. Maybe it's an item that you're going to use and deplete. Maybe it's an item that's going to produce future income. Whatever the item is, you got to purchase it. And you enjoyed it, but now you have to resave money to make another purchase. Right? So those cash flows, saving, withdrawing, spending, saving, withdrawing, spending. And I'm not playing word games, but I kind of am. Premium, savings, premium. And I'm not saying life insurance is a savings account, but it does have a beautiful accumulation component on the cash value. Then I collateralize, I borrow, purchase, loan repay. Saving, withdrawal, purchase, saving, withdrawal, purchase. I get the item. With life insurance, there's a premium, saving, whatever, but it's continuous. So the loan repayment is completely separate from the premium. I'm saving money. I'm accumulating capital. And then I'm going to collateralize that. I'm going to borrow against a loan against that ever continuing to compound cash value forever, or at least your whole life, right, to your age 120 if you make it. I'm going to borrow against it. It's a loan. I make the purchase, whether it's a depleting asset, a cash flowing asset, or experience, whatever it is, I or my people enjoyed that. Now I'm going to make a loan repayment. So loan repayment compared to savings, withdrawal, spending, loan, purchase, loan repayment. Okay. And there's lots of visuals out there on that. And it's not convoluted. It's just talking through the cash flows, a word game. I don't know. It's mental gymnastics. Just think it through. Okay. Then the other one is, I see this, it's kind of becoming, it goes along the lines of, I never get any straight answers. You know, I get these big, long stories. Hyperbole. I get all of these. I don't get a straight answer. So the person that's challenging the idea of the infinite banking concept, saying that I don't get straight answers. And one of them is rate of return. What's a rate of return? Rate of return, which, you know, can bleed off into the cost. You know, here, term, invest the difference. What's the cost? You know, because I can invest a difference and get a rate of return elsewhere that's greater than what you're going to get in the whole life policy. Rate of return. And many people know that Nelson said many times, and I agree with him entirely, not just because he said it, but because he said it. And it's true that this is not about rate of return. And it's really not. It's about controlling the banking function. But I don't want to leave that as hyperbole or a non-answer, okay? So the rate of return compared to what? Compared to the rate of return that you're enjoying in your savings account, which is pretty high now compared to the last 15 years. Compared to the stock market, compared to the real estate market or wherever you're putting your capital to enjoy this rate of return, is that what we're comparing it to? I don't know. My question is compared to what? And then to continue that, you know, even on these 90-10 policies, these 80-20 policies, you know, I'm as the agent, I'm not doing it. I see it all the time. I have done it in the past. Out of ignorance. So I think a lot of the people that do it today, it's also out of ignorance, but there's also some of them that know and they continue to do it. And so then it's not about ignorance. It's about character, in my little humble opinion. Okay. So, and Nelson talks about this in his book, and he demonstrates it. Okay, even in his second book, Building a Warehouse of Wealth, the rate of return. Do you want a 4.5% rate of return on a little or a lot? Right. So it's rate versus volume. You go look at the interest rate on your mortgage. Take a 30-year mortgage, $100,000. Oh, who am I kidding? A $300,000 home, 30-year time period, a modest interest rate, 4.5, 5, 5.5, whatever you can't get today. You're going to pay double that, often more than double. The home costs $300, 30-year fixed rate mortgage. You're going to pay $600,000 or more back. The rate was so small, 4, 4.5%, compared to the volume, 50% plus, right? Well, that idea, rate versus volume, applies to everything you do in the economic world, especially in banking, okay? So do you want to earn, you know, a really high interest rate on a really small amount, or do you want to earn a sustainable rate of return over a long time period on a lot? You know, and I'm not going to do the math for you today, but you can go do the math on that and you'll win with the volume. So if you look at the banking function today, the all-American family is going broke at 3, 4, 5, and 6% on everything they're financing. Well, you look at everything they're financing, now we're talking about a lot, volume. All right. So there's a difference between rate and volume, okay, that people commonly jump over or don't consider. And then you add that to the lost opportunity cost. Well, that's more hyperbole, James. Look, if I can earn 5% in a bank, and I believe I can, I know I can earn 4.9, so give me some grace. I'm going to round up to 5. Easy math for me, okay? So if I have $100,000 earning 5% and I go buy a $100,000 car, which is not a stretch today, right? I mean, I drive an old pickup truck, right? But let's say I buy a $100,000 tractor, okay? As soon as I take that money out of the bank and pay cash, I will no longer ever, ever earn 5% on the money that was in the bank. Why? Because it's not there. It's over there. I got equity in my new tractor that I paid $100,000 for, and it may be very profitable. Man, I may be able to grow crops, and I'm not a farmer. And I know a lot of farmers, really good farmers, and they're very profitable, you know, in spite of all the regulations that they continually have to deal with. My point is, that is a lost opportunity. You had the opportunity to earn 5% as long as the money was there. It's gone. As soon as you take it out of the bank and buy whatever it is you're going to buy. My example, $100,000 tractor that may be very profitable. Maybe it'll earn more than $5,000 in a given year. No question. But this lost opportunity is gone. Maybe the $100,000 went into a real estate deal that didn't go very well. Not only did you not get the interest, but you lost the principal too. That never happens. I know all of you real estate guru investors. I know you never lose money in real estate. I know. Okay. I'm saying this in love, okay? All right. How about cryptocurrency? You never lose money in cryptocurrency. You was earning 5% at the bank. Take it out. You'll never earn 5% on that money or a dime on that money again at the bank. You go buy a cryptocurrency and maybe, you know, it goes to a bazillion dollars and you're the smartest guy in the world for 20 years from now. What about a couple of years ago when all of those platforms went bankrupt, those coin purses or whatever? I mean, I have clients that lost several $100,000. One, $200,000, right? Okay, so every deal is not a deal, right? Just because you think it's a deal, you hope it's a deal, and what have you. So there is the idea of lost opportunity. So how do you combat that? What is the lost opportunity cost? Well, you look at it over any kind of a time period. I've got that in an example. I think we call them modules. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 modules that are out there. They're in the Learning Center at bankingwithlife.com that just numerically demonstrates that. What was the real cost of the purchase of that $100,000 tractor if I paid cash for it? Well, 5% over time, you know, if it's like the rule of 72, right? In 20 years, Your money will double in value if it earns 5%. So the cost of that tractor was $200,000 over that time period. Right? Because that's what the $100,000 would have grown to if I left it at the bank earning 5. It would have grown to $200,000. Now, I'm not saying that the tractor couldn't produce more value than $100,000 over that 20-year time period. I'm not saying that at all. But with the infinite banking concept, through leverage and controlling the banking function, because all of that was banking. Banking is nothing more but the movement of money. Deposits, withdrawals, loans, loan repayments, right? So if I'm controlling the banking function with the dividend paying whole life insurance policy, which you can bank with anything, right? I can bank with that $100,000 deposit at the bank. I can collateralize that through the bank. Right. I mean, so this is not a great big new concept. Leverage, the idea of leveraging an asset. I can put $100,000 in the stock market, right? And then I can borrow against that on margin. It has its own characteristics, right? If the markets go down, there are things that have to be done, you know, to shore up the margin, and none of that you're controlling, right? But I could put $100,000 in the bank, earn 5%, and then go get a loan from the bank. You know, 2% over, 3% over, whatever your bank may do, you know, they may lend you the $100,000. If you're earning 5, you're going to pay 7 or 8 or 9 on that loan from the bank, and they're controlling that loan. So if your crop doesn't produce, you know, you're still making all of these things. You should consider, in my opinion, thinking through the banking function, right? And who's really controlling that, which is the fundamental, foundational message that Nelson Nash discovered. Who is controlling the banking function? The idea that you can become your own banker, right? Then that's really what we're talking about. And so my encouragement is not to get hung up on the noise, because they're really great presentations, or they speak very eloquently with authority, so therefore they must be right. No, or if the presentation is really complicated, therefore it must be good. No, I'm saying you think through these things. Think through life insurance, the construct. Well, you don't have to be an expert. I always say that, because you don't. But if you understand how dividend paying whole life insurance works, and then how universal life insurance works, how variable universal life insurance works, it'll help you make a decision on which product to use if you want to become your own banker using life insurance. Okay. And then get beyond the presentations with authority and beautiful visuals on the mechanics of a life insurance policy, all right? And then you think through the idea or the actuality of loans and loan repayments on assets, deposits at the bank, you know, investments with the broker that you can borrow against on margin. Think through the HELOC. Think through all these things that are coming at you 90 to nothing whenever you type in infinite banking concept or Nelson Nash or Banking with Life, and all those people, they're paying good money, you know, to show up first, and God bless them. My point is, when you think through the noise and you bring a little clarity to what's really going on, you will know what to do. You will know what to do. And so the banking concept, if you're collateralizing a dividend paying whole life insurance, it's built properly for you and your family, and you have a relationship or at least support service, you know, that can continue to help you after a purchase, maybe walk you through the mechanics of making a loan and loan repayment, when you should, when you shouldn't. The end result of practicing the infinite banking concept over any time period is a win for the one who does. So, kind of the rate of return, and I've said it many times too, the rate of return on a life insurance policy compared to what, 5 years? You know, it's very difficult to compare rates of return on different portfolios. Maybe there's a real estate portfolio, maybe there's a bond portfolio, maybe there's a stock portfolio, maybe there's a blended portfolio of stocks and bonds, maybe it's blended with stocks, bonds, ETFs, and, you know, what other financial products, right? They all have different cash flows and different rates of return. How do you compare those with at least a modest amount of clarity. And let me share this with you. This is what I encourage. This helped me years ago. It helped me a lot. So you have all of these different portfolios, stocks, portfolios, equities with all kinds of blends, fixed securities, you know, bonds, varying durations and varying amounts, varying grades. You have a real estate portfolio. Maybe it's residential. Maybe it's residential and commercial and multifamily. Maybe it's multifamily or residential or commercial or a blend, right? Maybe it's the different CDs or money market accounts or whatever the portfolio is, right? It could be raw land in real estate. I don't want to leave that out. And then you have a life insurance policy. Well, they have a dividend rate that's declared. You can call it a gross dividend rate. You can call it whatever you want. But the companies that do declare, they declare annually. Not all companies declare their dividend interest rate. So maybe it's going to be at 5. And they're today, in my understanding, between 4 and about 6% dividend, declared dividend rates. Okay. So does that mean your life insurance policy is going to earn 6%? No, it does not. Well, then there's a guaranteed basis of value. You know, it's just a component of a formulary that life insurance companies use to not only comply with the IRS, but to price their life insurance products. You know, and this may be an old argument, but it still comes up. You know, life insurance companies have a 4% basis of guarantee, 2.75% basis guarantee, or 3% basis of guarantee. Does that mean your guaranteed interest rate is 2.75 to 4? No, it's a component in a formulary that is used to price life insurance from the life insurance company's perspective, right? And they add that in your life expectancy, the premium duration on a product, all these things to properly engineer life insurance policy. And if we think this through, how can you prove that, James? Well, if I paid a $100,000 premium, right, and I look at the cash value, if I'm going to build a 90-10 policy, all right, and I pay a $100,000 premium, I have $90,000 into the PUA in cash value, and the company has a 5% dividend rate, right? That would mean that I would expect on that cash value of $90,000 to see a $4,500 dividend at the end of year one. And then if that company had a 4% basis of values, then I should see a 4% increase on the $90,000, which is above the dividend, right? Is that right? Yeah. So that would be what, $3,200? So I should see a $7,700 increase in cash value on that to meet those? No, that's not going to happen. So without going really deep into the woods, and that may not be a very clear example, you know, pause it, write down the numbers, correct my math if I'm wrong, all right? The internal rate of return is a better measurement, in my humble opinion, when comparing rates of return on the various portfolios, whatever they may be. Real estate, equities, bonds, fixed, you know, deposits, life insurance, right? All of these have different cash flows in. I buy a bond, I bought a bond. It has a stated, you know, coupon rate, 5%. At the end of that period, maybe it's a 6-month bond, maybe it's a 1-year bond, 10-year bond, whatever it may be, right? That's a different cash flow. There's a cash flow out. When the interest is paid. And there's different durations compared to if I, you know, put $10,000, buy a $10,000 bond, has a 5% face amount, I'm going to get the 5% interest at the end of that duration, right? Okay. So if I put $10,000 in the market and maybe it's all equities, maybe it'll be 15% that year, right? All right. That's in 1 year. I bought a 10-year bond, so there's different. So now do I need to drag out the duration of the equities portfolio? Yeah, 10 years. Yeah, I do. Maybe I sold the bond at a discount or at a gain over that 10-year time period. I'm just trading bonds in the bond portfolio, and I'm buying different durations of bonds, and I'm continually trading them. You know, kind of like your mutual fund. You put $10,000 into a mutual fund. Your mutual fund turns over 100% during a given year. There's continual trading in the mutual funds. What does that mean? Well, we can talk about that all day long, too. Maybe it's real estate. You put $10,000 in real estate. Well, maybe you're buying notes. I don't know. Maybe you're taking the $10,000, leveraging it, and you're buying, residential, but maybe you're going to fix and flip it, whatever. There's different durations and different cash flows. You got to put more money in to rehab the property. You're going to get cash flow out when it sells. So my point here is, what's the rate of return on that deal? The durations are different. The cash flows are different. So you got to settle on a duration, and cherry picking the time duration in the financial world is a first red flag. Don't fall prey to cherry picking a timeline, because you're going to have unequal comparisons when you do, most likely. Okay. So look at all the most likely. I'm telling you, the duration matters. The cash flows in and the cash flows out matter. So if you pick a duration for your own comparison, all of these different portfolios, the same duration. And then you have to factor in, account for the different cash flows in, cash flows out, purchases, sales, you know, rehab, repairs, whatever, rental income, taxes, all of the different cash flows on the same duration. You will get to an internal rate of return. Each portfolio will have its own internal rate of return with the same duration, if that's what you picked, in my encouragement to pick a duration, and then consider all of the cash flows, the varying cash flows in and out at the end of the time period, and including all the different cash flows, you'll be able to calculate an internal rate of return. That is a more accurate comparison, the internal rate of return, than just rate of return. Okay. And I hope that's encouraging. You know, and you can do it. This is nothing complicated. We're not getting above third grade math here. Okay. All right. So, and there are other very simple pushback, rebuttals. I don't really know what you call them. I call a lot of them drive-by, you know, comments and remarks. And they're all based on, in my opinion, a lack of understanding. They just don't know. You know, like this individual that I did the original comment on, I mean, my heart really does go out to him. I think somebody's hurt him. I mean, he really doesn't know, in my opinion, the characteristics that are required to understand to do real comparisons. You know, and maybe he doesn't like, maybe they don't like life insurance. Perfect. Well, maybe they don't like real estate. Whatever. Just to do an equal comparison, all right, you have to have equal cash flows, or they don't have to be equal cash flows. You have to understand the cash flows in the equal duration. And I believe, I'm going to go back, Nelson said it. He said it. It's true. I believe it. I think you'd believe it too. Is if you know what's going on, you will know what to do. All right. I think I'm going to leave it there because I'm about gassed out. there are others, you know, and feel free to list in the comments other common pushbacks. Maybe you completely disagree with some or everything that I've said. You know, let me know. I won't eviscerate you. I've grown in grace, right? If they're legitimate to you, I mean, don't make things up, right? I mean, if they're legitimate, you know, no, James, you're wrong here. And if you can explain why, that would be helpful. If you can or don't care to, that's okay too. My point here is this is not comprehensive. They're very common comments, and there are many others. And if you want to share the others with me where we can talk about, we will. So, okay, I had fun. Hope you enjoy listening. Thank you for listening. Be sure you like and subscribe. Go to bankingwithlife.com. Kick around there. It's a website that we're currently rebuilding. You know, we're not social media gurus and all that. We're not going to track you down or hunt you down. But there are some good things there, like videos, that you can't see anywhere else. Especially if you're a client, there's a lot of books there that may be of interest to you. And then you can get to know us or more about us. You know, we have a beautiful, robust team here that show up every day and work hard for our clients, right? And if you're a client, I think you'd agree with me. If you're not a client, you have an opportunity. Okay, have a great day. Thanks. Be free.
Thank you for joining us on the Banking with Life podcast. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure to like and subscribe and click on that little notification bell. Otherwise, join us on Apple Podcasts and Stitcher for weekly content.